Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanako Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Nuria Kobo. Hi.
Hi.
Hello. How are you doing, Wanako?
It's so wonderful to have you here, and I'm really excited to have this conversation. And I love asking a big question that enables you to share as much as you feel comfortable sharing. So how did you come to see the world the way you do today?
Yeah, you always want the long version, don't you, of that question, yeah. The long answer would be, let's see. So I'm going to begin in this present moment. I am an ACAM student now. I am devoting almost everything I have now to this course and applying it to my daily life as best as I can. And so the things that brought me here have been many, really. When I look back now, I can see how everything was guided to get me to this point, of course. And so I can go, I feel like going backwards. So before ACAM came into my life, I was into yoga, studying and practicing. I was also a yoga teacher for some years. And before that, the first thing that I started doing in these kind of things was therapy, all kind of therapies, and I haven't stopped since because there was something not right with my life, with my head, with my mind, and so I needed answers, and that's what brought me to therapies in the first place, then to yoga, then starting to unwind Christianity a little bit, and then ACAM came completely in 2020. And before that, I can go a little bit backwards, but I think I'll let you talk now if you have more questions to help me continue.
Well, the perspective of going backwards sounds good. Let's look into how your first idea that you needed to change your mind about anything came up. Maybe you have some insights into that.
Yeah, I can remember the very first time I thought I need to go to a psychologist and I'm going to do that. I was like maybe 18 and I was in Scotland with a friend of mine. Something happened in a bar, nothing really serious happened, you know, in my life. But my mind was so, now I know that I was completely trapped by ego thoughts, but I was so terrible. I couldn't handle it anymore, you know, relationship with other people weren't going good. I wasn't feeling good with how I was relating to others. A lot of guilt, a lot of feeling, you know, unworthiness and many things that I started putting names to it afterwards. But yeah, that was the very first moment. But I can remember since young age having this, I don't know, crisis, something like that, you know, like feeling that there had to be another way, even if I couldn't put words to it yet. But yeah.
So you noticed something wasn't working out for you, something wasn't right. And so you went and decided to get help. How did you know where to get help, or what was the signs that told you where you should go, or whom you should ask, or what was it?
There was this fire. How do you say feria in English? You know, that like this place where people gather with all kind of therapies and yeah, like a marketplace, but of therapies and all this kind of stuff in my city in Barcelona. And I was walking around there, and I could see this sign, this paper that caught my eye. And then I decided there it was ¿cómo se llama? What's the name? Family Constellations, you would say. That was the first therapy I went into. It was quite intense because it was a group therapy, so it was quite intense, and a lot of stuff came up there. And but maybe before that, I went into I was having these recurrent throat pains since I was a kid, and at some point I couldn't handle it anymore. It was like I was fed up with that, and then a cousin of mine told me to go to a homeopathy, and that was my first expression session, you know, like the first time I talked to someone about how was I feeling. And I can't remember what he asked me, but I started crying just talking to him about, you know, what was going on with my throat. And that healed me really. You know, I stopped having recurrent pains. It was every year I had a strong inflation of my amygdala, and I realized that that helped me, and that was the thing that healed me. You know, maybe not the little pills, but probably that. So yeah.
Yeah, that's something A Course in Miracles speaks of, the healing that comes through joining. So I don't know how to put it, but I think this sharing or this expressing what was on your mind is something that is very healing. And you know, that if you think of the chakra system, the throat chakra is the chakra of creative expression. So that would fit.
Yeah, totally. And it was really, really, it was a really strong pain and really limiting for me. So and also the most impacting thing for me was to realize how we can be healed by something else than medicine, you know, the science medicine. I was really shocked by that, because I was having this every year. I was going through this procedure of allopath pills, and that was just putting a thing on the symptom, but it wasn't curing it. And they said to me, "There's no cure for that. You know, it's just something that happens." And I didn't conform with that. I was like, "No, that can't be. I can't be my whole life with this." You know, and then to realize and to see that there is really another way. That's what gives me hope and faith, actually. Yeah, and it is the same way. It's still working, you know, having faith by experiencing that things work.
Yeah, that's an important point that A Course in Miracles also makes. Experience gives you the certainty. So you need to just go with it. And yes, medicine helps in a sense, not that it may cure the causes, but it certainly, when you need it and you're not yet ready to heal the actual causes, or even if you are ready, medicine may be required. It's not a question of what is you're guided to at that time. And of course, we're very thankful that medicine can help us when we are in a crisis. So it's not a question of either or, it's a question of allowing healing to happen. no matter what, because it's always happening in the mind. So even if you're using pills, it's still happening in the mind. You're believing that that can help, and it does, right? So.
Yeah, it really does. Thank God we have we have pills to soothe the pain, the physical pain. But it's true. Yeah. We need to. That's how I feel. At least I need to go inwards to really heal. But meanwhile, of course, I don't have any problem of having any pills necessary. Yeah.
So that's a very important thing, is use what you have at your hand, right? No, saying no to medicine will not help you, but saying yes to the healing process in whatever way that's coming to you, that's really important. And I think that's one thing that you discovered, that it's not a physical thing, even if physical things are helping. It's not physical in nature, in more depth. Of course, there's physical explanations for everything, but they don't explain the place where it's coming from in truth. And I think that's something that, ACM is providing a whole framework to look deeper. And I think that's what's important, is that we dare to go deeper and look deeper.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking that this image came to mind of how the healing process went then, back then, with the thing with my throat. Because when I was having the pills with the medical allopath thing, I was just having it and just hoping for it to pass. But with the homeopathy, it didn't stop so much the symptom, you know? So the symptom was still there. I made the decision in my mind that I would try it no matter how painful that would be. And it was really painful by the time, because it was really, really strong thing going on there, you know? And I remember having a lot of pain, but just going through it. And it was really harsh, but at the same time, yeah. Now I realize that I just could allow it and somehow to feel it, and so that's probably what healed that. Well, I'm just having guesses. Of course, we don't have a clue of. I mean, at least that's how I want to go. I want to be like, I don't know anything. But now I'm seeing also that as the course says, we need to bring darkness into light. So if we don't allow darkness to come up, it's like we cannot bring it to light, right? So I think that also had to do with this healing process back then, which has to do with what you were just talking. Where does it come from, really? It's believing that I am something I'm not.
Yeah, that's a very central theme to A Course in Miracles, is who am I, right? I know that there's other traditions that have that same question, and you ask it and ask it and ask it until it actually shifts. And in A Course in Miracles, it tells you who you are, right? You are love. And it provides you with a whole framework to discover that step by step if necessary, or right away if you're ready for it.
Yeah, it's quite big, the course, let's say that, at least. Yeah, it's amazing how this course provides so much framework and so much work. And I come from linguistics. I studied translation at university, and when I started with the course, at some point I realized why I wasn't understanding the text. I started to practice the lessons at the beginning, not reading the text till very, very little ago. And I couldn't understand a thing. And I realized that it's like a meta language, you know, like it's so abstract, but because it's so abstract, it gives you the possibility to bring it to the specifics, like in a whole bunch of thousands and millions of situations. That's why we have this feeling sometimes that we can read, or always we can read one sentence one and again, and we have these different interpretations for every moment. And that's amazing how the course does that. And as what you were saying of Ramana Maharshi, this what am I thing, I remember that a lot. It's basically the same, because it's this technique that says neti neti. Neti means not this, not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. So anytime that you have a thought, just realize that you are not it, basically. And then that's the way to silence, right? To quietness and to know who we are. Yeah, it's a beautiful example.
Maybe you'd like to share some more of your personal experiences, like you did with the throat, how something shifted in you, even if it was painful for a long time, then it shifted and it didn't recur every year anymore or less extreme. And were there other things that gave you a sign that going deeper and looking within actually was working for you?
Yeah, there was this other thing that helped me realize that was more related to emotions, and it was the bug flowers. You know them? It's a system of well, I think everyone would know them, bug flowers. But the thing was struggles with different kind of emotions, and I started stabbing them by myself, or maybe someone giving them to me and trying them. And the first time that I realized that I, by taking, you know, I was having this preparation for something. And I mean, I had this specific problem, let's say, because I can't remember right now, but, and then they had me this preparation and I started having them. And at some point I realized that something happened in an interaction, you know, with someone, and I realized that I didn't react, and that was really strange, because in that situation I would have reacted very badly, you know. And that happened, this kind of silence that I'm experiencing also now, this kind of silence of, I know now that it's not, is the trigger is not working, you know, and so the ego doesn't enter, and I was like, what's going on here, you know, like I should be screaming, or not screaming, but probably, like, you know, like feeling very angry or something like that. And I was just so calm, and like nothing happened, and it was like, wow. And then I realized, wow, I'm having these back flowers, you know, like maybe this is making some kind of change in my actual energy, because that's what they are about, right? Like energy, they talk about energy. So yeah, and then when people started saying to me, like, oh, you know, homeopathy, bug flowers, they're nothing, you can analyze them on the you know, on the little thing, and then you'll see that there's nothing there. And I say, well, it's like placebo. If it works, why not using them, you know? and so I went all the way through that. And after these were like the first experiences I can remember now of something external helping me apparently change something inside, like in this deep way. And yeah, because medicine, the official medicine, it's sorry, it's like an external authority that's making you healed, but you have nothing to do there, you know? And then there's these alternative medicines that are starting to tell you you have something to do with your healing, you know? And then there will be many, I mean, there's many steps that we could take, but then you come to A Course in Miracles, for example, or one of those, or the ones that tell you you can change your mind, all these kind of medicines, let's call them medicine because they heal.
So those were first inklings of that, something it had to do with you, whether you were feeling better or not.
I couldn't hear you. Sorry. Can you repeat that?
So those were first inklings that healing had something to do with what is going on within you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That I had a role to play, you know, because otherwise I was just a victim. And in this change of paradigm, I was a playing part on my healing. And I had to be, I realized that I had to be a really active player now, not for my healing to happen. And then I started with all these things related to psychology, not psychology directly, but of course, I mean, psychotherapy, but also yoga, studying the mind, and you name all kind of, you know, of therapies like Ho'oponopono and all these kind of things that help you start changing your mindset. And I was really into that. I have been devoting my life practically to that, trying to make myself healed, you know. and it is just now that I'm starting to see a real change thanks to A Course in Miracles.
So you were speaking about linguistics and the linguistic perspective that you gained on A Course in Miracles as a meta language, or a language that goes beyond everyday language and that actually affects it because it speaks of it, in other words, and enables you to change your mind about things that are going on in the specifics. And so there's another debate in linguistics or in language interpretation, is the one where one says language determines your culture, or do you determine the language through your culture, who you are?
So you want me to answer on that? Does language, your question was, does language determine your culture, or how can you repeat that?
The usual debate is, does language determine your thinking, or does your thinking determine the language?
I'm sorry, I'm too lazy, too tired today to answer that question. I'm sorry, don't even want to think about it. But yeah, language and thinking, that's like like too much for me now. Sorry. Another question.
Well, it's a matter of communication, right? And are we using language to communicate something, or are we using the form of language as opposed to actually communicating something? Because A Course in Miracles says the message is more important than the form. The message is what it's about. The form can be any form, as long as the message is brought across. So is that the way you see language, or have you gained that insight in your life?
Yeah, what I can say about that, thank you for relating it to the course, because it gives me a little bit more of context, is that, the course says that words are symbols of symbols tries remove from reality, I think it's the quote. And what I would say, and that's what language, that's why I like languages so much, is that they help you communicate. So I realized that that was also something very guided in my life, you know, the use of languages to communicate. I was always very excited about all kind of, you know, nuances in words, and getting to know what that means, and also how language, different languages represent different cultures, you know. But yeah, what I would say is that what my heart wants is to let go of all symbols and just go to the truth. But as long as we believe we are here, it's like we need symbols, right? So I think, yeah, I can bring a metaphor. I don't know, it's like a tale or a myth or something like that. It's like this teacher is teaching his students, and he points at the moon, and the students look at the thing, at the teacher's finger, and the teacher says to them, "You fools! You should be looking at the moon, not at the finger." So what I would say is not to get too sticky with words, because content is what really is important. And I think that's what real communication is. Actually, what we learn when we study language is that words are just a tiny part of communication, because there's this whole, you know, this whole different kinds of communication that you are having when you are talking to someone, or just not talking to someone, just staying there, you know, body language, etc., the expression of your face. So there's so much more always to everything. Yeah, that's what I would say. I don't know if I answered your question.
Wow, what is your meta language?
Oh my God, that's a difficult question. My meta language. I don't know. Right now, I would say my meta language is the Holy Spirit, because that's who I try to remember to bring everything, so to reinterpret everything. So maybe, I don't know if that's a good answer, but that's what came. So yeah, let's say that.
Well, if the Holy Spirit is your meta language, we might go into how you experience the Holy Spirit's presence, or how do you experience that meta level of who you are?
Yeah, what came to mind first when I was talking about, when I was answering the question in the first place, is this idea that the Holy Spirit is not something outside of me, but it is a part of my mind. So it's the, you know, the wrong mind and the right mind. So it's not something apart from me. But I can experience it, or I can use it in different ways depending on how I'm feeling, you know. Like there's this part of my mind that needs sometimes an external figure, a father figure, you know, or a friend figure, or so I would use that as a you and me relationship, you know, where I would ask for help or I would pray for something. And then there's this other experience that I might have, which is just staying quiet and just feeling that it's a part of me and that I'm melting somehow with that. And that would go for Holy Spirit and trying to connect with God too. Yeah, and then also I could say that there's this other part of my my mind that uses symbols and signs and symbols outside of me, of course. You know, people talking to me or songs or, I don't know, just ideas that come to my mind somehow. Like, for example, the idea that came to be here with you today, that was a prompt that I had. And that was a nudge inside that said, just go for that. So that's a sign and symbol that I can relate to also with the Holy Spirit. And yeah, maybe probably there's more, but that's the ones I can think of right now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in A Course in Miracles that is using the same methods as the scientist would use. Do you see that as well, or do you see something else?
Yeah, of course, I can see that. We have this Spanish teacher here that he's called Jorge Pellin, and he is a biologist. And he said that the first thing that caught his eye, or the thing that I heard him once talking about this, that the course is it's so solid. He was talking about solidity with the course, and I can see that with my very limited mind, in the sense that I cannot understand many things, or I'm not very brilliant, you know, in or respects to analyzing, or in that sense, if you're a very intelligent answer, maybe, but what I realize is that, of course, the first thing that it does is it takes you into practicality, and otherwise you cannot know that, you know, just reading or trying to understand intellectually doesn't work like that. So that's how it's similar for me to the method, the science method, with my limited knowledge of the science method, but yes, things that I know. And the second thing that I would say, and that's where my limits are big, is that I can feel that the solidity, you know, and I cannot tell you how, but sometimes it's just like I just feel that it's, you know, that it's true. I don't know how to say it. And I think experience is basic. I mean, when I was studying yoga, I remember that I had this this idea was in my mind that it has to be 1% theory, 99% practice, and it's always like that. And with the course especially, because it's so metaphysical, either you put it into practice or it doesn't. I mean, it's just a bunch of strange words put together, sometimes beautiful, sometimes, but in general, it's like you cannot understand, even if you consider yourself a very intelligent person, you know.
Yeah, well, I think what's the course says about that is that it's an experience. It's not about the words, it's about the experience. And these words are being used to remind you of that experience. And in other words, to remember who you are, if you want to put it in another way. So I think that's a scientific method, because you want to find out what is true and what is not, what works and what doesn't work. And I think that's something that A Course in Miracles wants you to get, to understand this works, this doesn't work. To think this way works, this way, thinking this way simply isn't working. And to recognize the difference.
Yeah, and so in my personal story, when I started reading, as I was telling before, with the text, I was very frustrated because I consider myself to be quite, I mean, I was intelligent. I am intelligent, you know, I can read, I've read my whole life, many kinds of books, different kind of books, you know, I think I can understand many things. And with the course, I was like, what? I mean, I couldn't even read a whole line understanding it. And I was really frustrated. But then as time went by and as long as I have been understanding, I've realized that, or at some point I just thought, you know, this is a book for silly people, because it puts it so simple, so plain. It's just either or that. This is the right thinking, this is the wrong thinking. This is ego, or you are either in the ego or you are in God, right? I was reading this sentence a couple of days ago, the maze of complexity. It's so huge in this world that we need to make it simple. And this course, I think it was Helen Schackman or the first four, they were saying that, yeah, that it was made for it was downloaded for intellectual people, because if you have a mind so complex, you need a lot of complexity to undo it, you know, like somehow. But at the end of the road, it's so simple that I just love it, because you can't get lost with that. I mean, you get lost anyhow, but you can always go back to the basics, you know, and say, okay, I'm not feeling good. I'm thinking wrongly. So that's one of the best things for me. You just said that. It's just so simple that you cannot miss it if you practice enough to remember that.
Yeah, those are, you know, exploration principles. I don't know if you know chaos theory a little. Anyways, the idea is you put up a way things are going to proceed. And then you look at what it does, right? And what they came up with simple formulas of how things should proceed or become more and more, the things came up that looked like plants, like this, like that, all kinds of things that you see in nature. And so I think this is very important, that simplicity, and actually the expression of simplicity is so vast. Is infinite. I think that's something that you could see in chaos theory. I know that's a personal interpretation, but anyways, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very powerful idea and very beautiful idea. Yeah. Because when you start looking at the world, you just realize that it can't be real. I mean, not real, but it's like, really? Like, how is it possible? You know, like, so many things. It's so complex and it's so unpredictable and at the same time predictable, because there's always about death, you know, it's always about death and suffering and loss. So different kinds of death. So when you start looking at it, yeah, you just want simple more and more, right? It's like because you can feel that with with so many limitations and so many possibilities and alternatives and crossroads and roads and paths and steps, and it's so complex that it's so easy to mess up, you know, Yeah, at some point you just realize that you just want to drop it. That's what I what I realized, that that's why I also love A Course in Miracles, because it says to you, you're not a person, you're not a character, you're not the character you think you are. And I realized that I couldn't. I mean, I realized because of my experience that I had tried so many ways to fix my psychology or whatever, you know, to make me a better person, to try to relate better, to be better, a better woman, a better professional, a better this, a better that, a better, and it's never ending, and it wasn't working, and there were so many things to sort out. And when I found this path that just says to you, just drop it. It's an illusion. You don't need to make it better or to solve anything. It's like, really? And then you start practicing it, and you realize how true that is. And it's so relieving that you just want to have more of that, you know, and that gives you, you know, the energy and the boost to go about, you know, about simple and simple and more simple and more quietness and more silence and just forgetting about the world's ways. Because it's what you were saying, it's expansive, it doesn't limit you, it's peace. It's peace, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the tenets in A Course in Miracles, or one of the most important quality that a teacher of God had is and gets is freedom. Because the Holy Spirit wants to give you back your freedom, to remind you that you're free. Now, what does that mean, right? What does that mean, yeah? Well, there's nothing wrong about who you are, right? Inherently. So yeah, that's quite an important thing to think about, and to like you were saying, all these allusions to what you are thinking isn't right. If you're being unhappy simply means you're thinking something that doesn't make sense, right? That is based on an illusion. And something that isn't true. And that's how simple it wants to get to. Okay, if you're not happy, you're thinking something wrong. Something's wrong, right? Yeah, well, if you're unhappy, something is wrong, because otherwise you wouldn't be unhappy, right? Something feels wrong, right? Feels off. But what it is also doing is saying that doesn't mean that you are wrong, that you are off, right? Just means that you're thinking something wrong about yourself and about the world as a metaphor for, or as a container, making visible what you're thinking about yourself, right? Well, is also then what you're thinking about the world is wrong if you're unhappy. And so this is quite a it demands that you look. And it also asks you not to be mad at yourself for that. It asks you to actually cherish yourself for that ability to actually make something appear to be real that isn't real, and to let go and then decide differently.
Yeah, it is like that. I don't have anything more to add.
Well, there's a whole lot more to go into. So let's look at another level of it. When you encounter people, and you encounter people all the time, even if you are living a secluded life, encountering them in another way then. Say you're watching something or you're listening to something. You're always encountering something that appears to be outside of you. And so what is your go-to practice when you have these encounters?
Oh, That's a good, that's a big question also. Yeah, when, I mean, yeah, what I would start with is that sometimes I am aware and my mind is conscious that I am meeting people and that I am practicing, I am willing to practice this. And sometimes when I meet people, I'm just like unconscious that I am practicing this. So I would say I'm just in oblivion. So I don't remember. But either if I start the interaction with conscious or unconscious, if I am unconscious, at some point I just realize that I am judging or that I am, I don't know, whatever, you know, like thinking that they are out there and stuff. So I just remind myself that I need to look in a different way. And yeah, it's a core question of A Course in Miracles, right? The relationship with people. Yeah, maybe you can ask something more specific to this, so I can answer a little bit better, because yeah, there's a bit of a fog in my mind with that, with so many things there. I don't know if you can ask me something else.
Well, you can choose a person you have very strong emotions about, if that helps you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it depends on how, what teacher am I choosing at the moment. And sometimes I am already with Holy Spirit, so I can relate with that person in a more soft way or without so many judgments. But with a specific person that I have very strong emotions with, ego is always clinging there and wanting to be right. So the thing about relating to others is the past. So everything that I have, all the labels, all the judgments, all the grievances I'm holding that go directly when this person stays there, right? And so what I try to do is to, so I have, I could say that we all have this ability, of course, that of having like two lines of thought, more than two, but well, we can say that, you know, that we may be interacting with you, for example, right now, and I can be in the back of my mind, you know, choosing or praying or, you know, or asking myself, inquiring or whatever, or observing the situation. So I always try to do that, to be, if I can't be with Holy Spirit all the time, I try to be very attentive to what's going on, so I can handle it over, you know, so I can realize what's the belief and what are the beliefs that I'm holding, what are the grievances I'm holding, what are the feelings that I have, so I can handle them. Yeah, that would be the way that I try to interact with, especially with people that I have very strong emotions with. So there's always this. So there's this part of gentleness, you know, that I'm learning, or that I am accepting more than learning. I am unlearning harshness, let's say. So I'm accepting gentleness in the sense that I can not judge myself so strongly when I get clinged on ego thoughts, you know. So, or if I say something that's out of tune or something that may be interpreted as, you know, silly or whatever. So there's all these things there. I don't know if that answers.
Well, it's a good thing to know that you're able to work on it, be with it, even with people you have very strong emotions about. Now let's look at people where you have a professional relationship to. How do you apply A Course in Miracles in situations in which you are the professional?
Well, right now I'm not working as a professional. I have some relationship with, but I don't have co-workers right now. So I think you were talking more about that, right? So I cannot relate to that right now. When I am the professional in any circumstance, so here there's the thing of roles. I mean, there's always the thing of roles, but and the thing, I mean, we're talking about self-concept also. That's what I feel. And yeah, self-concept is a big thing too. So it's what it's all about too. So, but when I am the professional, how do I apply A Course in Miracles? Yeah, I basically try to observe, in my case, the character is like a very proficient, there's this perfection that I try to, you know, to achieve and to show and to have this, you know, this appearance. Not so much in the dressing thing, but you know, in the ways of talking and all these things. So what I can say about that, applying the course for me has been and doing all this self-concept of specialness, and I am not undoing it. Of course, I'm just letting it to be undone because I cannot undo it. So I just realize it's always the same thing, you know. I just observe. I try to be as attentive as I can when I'm doing things, and I try to realize when things are going on that aren't making me feel good. You know, that I am putting myself over someone or below someone, or if I get angry or I have all these kind of emotions. So I try to realize that, to be aware and to let that be undone, to not wanting to be right. And that's when the funny things come, right? Like I want to be right, you know. I don't want to release some of my self-concept parts, so that's where all the fun stuff is. when you don't want to release, right? So, but yeah, that's how I apply it when I'm in the professional I'm space.
Yeah, I think that's a very important subject, the wanting to be right. It's a really, really something that we've been taught a lot. Everyone wants to be right, and it's good to want to be right. Now, A Course in Miracles is telling us the best thing you can do is to be wrong, right? Because then you're happy. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah, for me, what came to mind when you were saying about wanting to be right is to have the willingness to let go, and yeah, it's the grip of the ego is very strong, because that's how you were saying, right? Like you're born, you're educated, you start learning the world's way. You go to school, to whatever they teach you, what's wrong, what's right, what's less wrong, what's a little bit wrong, what's totally awful. And in order to survive, you need to learn very well all these things. So it's very important to have an opinion. And I'm smiling because I was talking the other day to a girl, and And she was saying, yeah, you know, of course I have my opinions of people. I just don't share them. Like if that was something good, no? And I was saying, yeah, but we judge anyway and we put levels everywhere, right? So, but yeah, so... yeah, it's having the willingness to let go all that we have learned to be happy. There's this joke of a man that's talking to another one, and he says to him, you know, you're always happy. Why is that? And the other one says, oh, that's because I never say something against anyone. Like I never say that people are wrong, you know. And he says, no, that can't be possible. And the other one says, yeah, maybe not. So, and it's just that, you know, just what do you want to be happy or to be right? And when you start practicing that, you really realize that it's so true that all conflict comes from wanting to be right. But that's not something that the world teaches you or encourages you to do or doesn't even tell you that there's that possibility, right? So it's quite challenging, but it's a super fun and beautiful way to follow.
Yeah, I think one of the stipulations of what you should learn in higher education and at work, right? At least that's what we've been learning now, is to actually start knowing yourself in the sense of knowing what is good for you, what is bad for you, what you think about every subject, as many as possible, to so to speak, gather information and analyze it and then make your own opinion about it, maybe do your own research, figure out what is working and what isn't, right? And so on, and corroborate it with other people's research and make comparisons and so on. Now the question is, why is that something that, A Course in Miracles doesn't say that that's wrong, right? But it does say that you have to choose either happiness or being right. You cannot have both.
Yeah, what came to mind was that when we talk about what we have to learn in the world, and because I was thinking like I can make, because I was when you said you can make a research on your own on a specific theme. I remember once a teacher of mine back in told me, no, you have to go to the origin, you know, like you cannot read a book that someone wrote about that book. You need to go to that book. And then, you know, go to the origin. And now it's like I feel like I'm doing the same. I am having this strong research since many years ago now of who am I. But the thing that's different is that when we are trying to know or to conform what we are in the world, is that we are looking outside. We're never looking inside, so that's the main difference. But it's exactly the same at the end of the day. You need to do an inquiry of what you are, because you think you are something you're not. But well, that would be another part, right? But the thing is that we learn. So it's like building up self-concept, you know, to be who you want to become. And at some point you realize in the way that there's always something missing, no? When you try to look outside, like the grass is always greener on the other side, that's universal, because we are looking where it can't be found, what's our true identity. So we need to turn inwards, meaning, you know, looking at the mind, as ACAM says, but many other ways talk about the same. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this is a universal thing, and even the course says that it's not the only way, it's just one way, and always lead to the same end. So it's just another symbol, of course, and that's also very beautiful, because it means that, I mean, it gives more truth to the whole thing, because we're all looking for the same.
Yeah, it says the one thing we can all agree to is that we want to be perfectly happy. That's what A Course in Miracles says. So that's a fun one anyways. So yeah, this search for meaning, as Viktor Frankl would call it, and others have other words for it, but this attempt to be perfectly happy. And in A Course in Miracles, it says, you are not the source of who you are. Right? In many teachings, it's like, you are God, so you're the one who created yourself. And A Course in Miracles says, no, you did not create yourself. And that's why you are so perfect, right? Infinitely valuable and perfect, because the source of who you are is perfect and cannot extend itself in any other way than perfection. So what it extends you, for instance, as the extension of the source, cannot be anything else than perfect. Now, of course, we have the dilemma that what we're looking at or thinking is not perfect, right? It doesn't look perfect, doesn't feel perfect, doesn't feel right, doesn't feel happy, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of criticism about what we're seeing and what we're thinking about it, right? And this idea that, like you were saying, the self-image, of building a self-image, yeah, the idea of the world is to make it always a better and better and better self-image, and making it so powerful that nothing can topple it. But of course, the self-image is never done. And A Course in Miracles is saying, yeah, stop worshiping false idols, as it's called. And, you know, that image of who you are is a false idol, because it doesn't stand up to actual scrutiny. So if you actually look at it in total honesty, it will no longer stand tall. But A Course in Miracles is saying, do not fear that, because who you actually are never was in jeopardy. It was never in danger in the first place.
Yeah, this world and how it works is always more, more, more better. Compare yourself. And then even if you get to your ideal, rules will change at some point, and then you will have to start all over again. So you can do, for example, nutrition tips, you know, they change every 10 years or something, or 5 years. So first you start, you know, eating meat because they say it's good, but then no, grains and whole grains are better, and so you change, and then, you know, and then they say, no, actually fat is good, so you should eat more fat, right? So it's like, It doesn't end. So, it doesn't end. So I just can go back to this idea again. Like, I just want to drop it all and just get to know myself as I truly am. And this idea of you didn't create yourself. It's basic also, otherwise it's like this illusion would be true, and that's some of the, this is one of the things that brings the science method for me to the course, for example, because it makes sense, right? Like when I read for the first time that God didn't create the world, it was like, of course. You know, and so many of us have this connection to this idea, because it's like, how could God create, if God is what they tell me he is, or it is, how could he have created such a terrifying world? And I think it's this idea is fundamental. Otherwise, we're doomed. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Yeah. Mm.
Are you happy that you're free to be unhappy?
Am I happy that I'm free to be unhappy? Yeah. Yeah, I'm free that I'm happy that what I'm happy is that when I am unhappy now, I know there's a way out. That's what I'm happy about. Because yeah, and of course, I am happy that I am unlearning harshness. I'm very happy about that too, because I can then accept more and feel the wrong things and the craziness of the ego in a gentler way, you know. I'm very happy about that. Yeah, I'm totally grateful and so. Yeah, it fills my heart. Yeah, I'm happy about that. Yeah. It's a game changer, really. Yeah, I'm happy that we have the power to choose again, you know? That we can always choose again. That it's just a matter of making this little tweak in our mind, you know, and I'm happy that we have such a powerful training tool that if we use it, guides us to train our minds to remember quicker, you know, and to rely on this power of decision, you know, because I can decide to stop being right and deciding for peace again, you know, as soon as I want. It's just a matter of willingness and a matter of remembering, but of course a matter of wanting, because it's so key to want to be truly peaceful and happy. And yeah, and it takes a lot of courage, this path, I think, because it's just turning everything upside down and backwards, you know. It's so out of the world, but I'm very happy. I'm very happy for that. Yes, I'm. Yeah. Yes, I would say it changed my life, really. Mm. Yeah, it was like the for now it's the final key to my salvation. Yeah, I can say that. So yeah, I'm super happy.
How about the thought of being the happy learner? Is that something that has come up for you, or have you felt that you are a happy learner, or have you been countering a lot of obstacles to that? And how have you moved forward nonetheless?
Yeah, the happy learner is such a beautiful section on the course, and everyone says like, yeah, I want to be the happy learner. It's like, no, not so easy. It feels like it's not so easy. I would say that I'm beginning to be now a little bit more a happy learner. And you know, I can sometimes, when I'm having to face, for example, I need to do something difficult or meeting someone who's gonna bring me trouble according to my thinking, I can have this feeling of I'm going to classroom today, you know. like I can start to be happier when my forgiveness lessons come. And it's helped me a lot, this thing. I just put it here because, you know, this interview had me a little bit nervous, and at some point, Jesus sent me, well, Jesus, you know, he sent me this post-it. He says, don't take it so seriously. And I have it in my, and I brought it here today to just look at it if I needed it. I haven't needed it, but now it comes in handy, because it's a matter of, for me, it's a matter of yeah, not taking it so seriously, you know, to start taking off weight of situations, of emotions, of dramas, of all these kind of things. And I have this friend, we're studying together, and she always brings me to this whenever I'm expressing or something, or I'm just, you know, just expressing private thoughts and saying what the ego is thinking about this or that. And then I may be a little bit, you know, like, I'm tired about this or whatever. And then at some point she says, can we laugh now about the crazy stuff, you know? And it's also practice, you know, to start laughing at that instead of taking it so serious, you know, so seriously. And I heard once this Erin Michelle, she said these words, you can be a serious student but not take it seriously. So you can be very serious about your practicing and your learning and your unlearning and everything. You can be very serious about it, but don't take it seriously. Because at the end of the road, we're not doing anything. Because if I think that I am in charge of my salvation, I'm dead. So I just need to start, you know, and put this prayer. And my way has been also to put this prayer in my heart, that I want to be it more light, you know, more lightly. I don't want it to be so terrible, so devastating. Of course, sometimes it feels devastating. Of course, sometimes it feels terrible still and everything. But I can remember now to laugh, you know, or at some point. And that's with the big things, but with the small things, I more and more laugh about it, you know. And I think it comes, I mean, yeah, I feel like I haven't done that, you know. It's that's how I realize for me that this idea of having the Holy Spirit as the corrector and has proven me that it works, because I didn't used to be a happy student at all. I always was into drama, you know, like, oh, these emotions and this, and I would, because I was trying to I was doing the best I could, but that all only led me to depression and anxiety and you know, and not never ending story, you know, and realizing that it's working this way. Yeah. Thanks for asking that, because I didn't realize that was about it. But yeah, it's about that. Yeah, the happy learning, the happy learner. Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm very happy for that. Thanks.
Yeah, that's an important topic and an important part of our lives. Is like you said, life is very, very serious. That's certain. It's all what it's about. So if you don't take it seriously, your life will crumble and nothing will work. That's the way we've been taught to think it is. Now, your expression of seriousness as something totally different, something that you don't take serious, that's a very interesting concept, because the idea that in order to succeed in life, you have to take it seriously. Yet you can be a very dedicated learner and have fun, I think is what you were trying to express. So you can actually be totally into it. You're doing everything you can, but you know that at another level, it's not you doing it. You can't do it. it's something else that is guiding the whole thing. And then you are getting to some place much more quiet in your mind, right? Where you can actually laugh. And not because you're laughing about how silly or how stupid the ego is or the ego thoughts are. It's actually some other type of laughter. Maybe you want to explain it.
Yeah. How would I put it? I would say first that what you are saying is because I am taking it very seriously, it's happening that I'm not taking it. I'm not taking things seriously, you know, so I can laugh more because I am taking it very seriously and I am training my mind as much as I can or as I feel like. I am getting to laugh more about ego thinking. And because I am training more seriously, it's because it's leading me to be able to train more and more. So it's just like, you know, like a chain of learning, I would say, or of unlearning. So as much as I unlearn, I can laugh more. And it's not like I'm laughing at dramas, but I'm just not taking them seriously. So that would be, yesterday we were reading this, can't remember what it was. It was a lesson, I think. And it says, it was talking about a sweet laughter that fades away something, you know, something, this beautiful quotes that the Course has. And it talked about a sweet laughter, you know, and it was, so that would be like this feeling of, that's not true. And it's a relief, you know, that would be like a way for me to put it in words, this laughter, this laugh more about illusions. It's like I start to see that they are not so firm somehow. They're not, illusions are not, yeah, they start losing you know, this, and then they start fading and they start, so you start seeing a little bit more like it's not true. So you just can, you know, it's like if you're watching a movie and you're crying because there's something happening, if you stop and say, oh, it's just a movie, nobody died there, for example, right? You say, okay, so there's no need for crying, you know, because it's not true what's going on there. So that would be it, yeah.
So would you say that what previously was an impassable wall, it is a place where you can just walk forward now?
Yeah, sometimes it feels like that. It's quite a strong metaphor, but yeah. Yeah, I was trying to remember these lyrics of a song. Illusion so solid and vast that I used to believe in that. And then they fade. Yeah, it's, I would say, yeah, like, what would an image for me be? I am like a kinesthetic person, you know, like I have this, like the feeling, you know, like touching or, and I would use this idea of a rock, for example, that it's so solid and then you realize that it starts being like a cloud. And for me, it wouldn't be like going past it, but just feeling this release in my being, you know, like I cannot feel this weight so much anymore. I would say more weight. Yeah, that's it. I would say like it's not so heavy to carry. It's not such a burden, you know. It's more. Yeah, It's like if you had to climb a mountain with a 60 kilo back, and then suddenly you have a 2 kilo back, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, I can do that. So that would be another metaphor. But yeah, the one of the wall would be, yeah, another one we could use, totally.
Yeah, I like the metaphor of the weight, because you can actually give it numbers. So, I mean, 60 to 2, that's quite a huge change. I mean, we have all these scales in psychology, and they're usually from 1 to 10 or 0 to 10. But you gave a much bigger scale, 60 to 2 to 0. And then you say, okay, there's only 2 left. I mean, that's quite a journey. How did you do that? Many people will ask, you know, how did that happen? You know, from a weight of 60 kilos to a weight of 2 kilos. I mean, that is amazing. It's like, yeah. Anyways, so let's go to the final stage of this conversation. How can people reach you if they would like to reach out to you?
I could give my email, for example, because I have Instagram and Facebook. I have Facebook, yeah, Nuria Cobo. I think they can find me there. And yeah, but I'm not posting anything on the course. I do have a little account on Instagram. It's called El Hogar de la Paz. It's in Spanish. It's not really like a big thing, but that would be a place where they could find me, El Hogar de la Paz, yeah. And yeah, Facebook or my email if they want to. It's nuriacobo at gmail.com.
Great. So I've asked a lot of questions. Now you have the opportunity to ask yourself a question and answer it.
Myself a question. Yeah, my question would be, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I would go totally for, I want to be happy. I want to be at peace. I want to feel the love. Yeah.
So I guess we could pray now and say, may we all choose happiness rather than being right. So thank you everyone for joining us and having this opportunity of getting to go deep together. It's amazing to be able to talk about these things and go and thereby teach each other or teach together who we actually are, because we're walking each other home, as A Course in Miracles says. So thank you so much, Nuria. And thank you everyone for being here, joining, listening. Please spread the word, let people know about the podcast, sign up to it, follow it, whatever you do, review it. And perhaps, if you're inclined to, become a guest on it as well, or join live and listen and comment and ask questions or share something. So thank you, all of you, and till next time. Bye-bye.